Hi, I'm Rosemary Martorana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and you're listening to Intelligence Unclassified. This podcast is exactly what the title states, unclassified information about current trends in homeland security for the state of New Jersey, as well as educational information and resources for your awareness. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Twitter at NJOHSP and Facebook. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov.
Thank you for tuning in to episode 31 of OHS&P's Intelligence Unclassified podcast. My name is Josh. I'm the Senior Cyber Threat Intelligence Analyst with the NJ KIC, the New Jersey Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Cell, which is a bureau within the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. For those listening to the podcast and the audio-only version, this presentation was built to coincide with the PowerPoint presentation, so I will try to be as descriptive as possible in terms of what you'd be seeing on a slide, but you can request a copy of the slides so you can follow along by contacting the NJ KIC at njccic@cyber.nj.gov. Now, to be honest, I'm only going to be able to scratch the surface of the dark web today, but we always encourage our partners in the public and private sector or even private citizens to contact us with questions. Our resident dark web expert who contributed most of the research actually was not able to join me today. Her name is Krista, but I will provide some of her notes and comments throughout. And I, again, encourage anyone with questions to email them in, and Krista will run them to ground. So our presentation starts off with an attention-grabber image of a base jumper free-falling down into a massive sinkhole. It looks like a giant black hole in the middle of the ground, and there is no end in sight, and in the darkest portion we have a caption, "Dive into the deep dark web." Now there are many graphics out there that depict the dark web, but I chose this one for two reasons. First, I think base jumping is really, really cool. But more importantly, it is actually a really good analogy to explain the deep and dark web. It is just below the surface. Although many would consider it a hazard or off limits, it's accessible to anyone who wants to explore it. And the only people who truly know what's down there and what it looks like are those that have seen it with their own eyes. As far as an agenda for today, I'm going to cover why the deep and dark web and cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin are significant to us in Homeland Security. Hopefully clear up some of the confusion as to what the deep web is versus the dark web, the history of how the deep and dark web came about, who uses it, what people use it for, why and how, some examples of illicit goods and services available on the dark web, how transactions are conducted, which in most cases is Bitcoin. So we'll talk a little bit about cryptocurrency, and finally we'll talk about the way forward and what we think lies ahead. As I said, there are a lot of graphics out there, most of which use an iceberg to explain what the deep and dark web are in relation to the internet. One in particular that we like comes from a company called Flashpoint, who specializes in collection and analysis of threats emanating from the deep and dark web. So the vast majority of internet users only know what's on the surface, in other words, the tip of the iceberg. This is what most people interact with on the internet, the millions of web pages that are indexed and accessible via search engines such as Google, Bing, and Yahoo. But it is widely reported that what's below the surface, the deep and dark web, is several orders of magnitude larger than the surface internet that we all know. Sticking with the iceberg example, everything below the surface is what we call the deep web. And the common characteristic between the deep and dark web is that websites and data are not indexed or accessible by traditional search engines. The dark web, on the other hand, is a subset of the deep web and can only be accessed using special software that the user must download. On the graphic, one side shows the deep web and provides some examples, such as BitTorrent, Internet Relay Chat, known as IRC, and password-protected forums. The other side of the graphic shows the dark web, with Tor and I2P listed as examples, and we added two others, Freenet and Riffle, that are also dark web networks. The dark web is also commonly referred to as the dark net, spelled one or two words. Using each of the examples of the dark web networks, we would consider each of those a dark net, and collectively we would refer to them as dark nets. So we ask ourselves the important question, so what? Why are these topics important? Back in April, we published an analysis report and assessed with high confidence that a range of criminals, malicious hackers, and violent extremists will increasingly utilize the dark web to facilitate illicit activity, which will ultimately materialize into threats to public safety, as threat actors can securely communicate, conspire, and acquire materials or know-how to carry out acts of violence or other malicious activity. For years now, law enforcement and Homeland Security organizations have observed as criminals and terrorist groups increasingly utilize technology and the internet to facilitate their operations. We see these groups increasingly turning to the dark web for several reasons. The low barriers, in other words, it is easy to access. There is low risk of getting caught, or at least lower risk than using the unsecure internet or conducting illicit activity in person. And there is a wide and concerning selection of illicit goods and services available to all. King's College recently analyzed all of the accessible content on the common dark web network known as Tor and found that 57% of the active websites are illicit in nature. There are two recent examples that demonstrate why the dark web is of concern to Homeland Security and public safety. Many of you listening are likely aware of the mall shooting that occurred in Munich, Germany last month in July. What you may not know is that investigators believe the shooter acquired his weapon via the dark web, according to a number of media reports. The theory is that because Germany has strict gun laws, the shooter likely turned to the dark web to acquire his weapon illegally. Additionally, it likely cost less than traveling elsewhere in Europe and purchasing directly from a dealer. The weapon was also found to have had the serial number shaved off, which is a telltale sign of an illegal weapon. We are waiting for additional reports to clarify if it was truly the dark web versus a deep web forum or a smartphone app such as Telegram. Another example of the relevance is the use of dark web tools by terrorist groups. In an intelligence report released in July, Flashpoint stated that ISIS and other jihadists have been testing various technologies since at least 2007, and in 2008, the popularity of Tor grew sharply amongst jihadists conversing in online forums. They went on to explain how terrorists are instructed to download Tor onto a USB thumb drive for easy use at internet cafes or wherever they access the internet. This reinforces the assessment that criminals, terrorists, and other bad actors are likely to increasingly turn to the dark web. So to revisit the distinction between the deep and dark web, the deep web is a large portion of the internet, arguably the largest portion, that is not indexed by standard search engines and consists of file exchanges, password-protected forums, and invite-only chat rooms. The deep web is accessible via common web browsers and to anyone who can navigate their way to a particular website, database, or forum. The dark web is a subset of the deep web and is only accessible via specific software, not via standard web browsers. Users must download the free software in order to access the dark web. Like the deep web, the dark web is not indexed, and most URLs are random strings of alphanumeric characters. Therefore, users need to know where to go or receive a link from someone else. As far as the history behind the development of the dark web, in 2000, Freenet was actually the first dark web network to start hosting content. In 2002, the U.S. government, specifically the Naval Research Laboratory, developed the Tor network with the original intent of protecting intelligence operations. But the Tor project eventually grew and expanded when it was realized that it could provide a mechanism to whistleblowers, political dissidents, and populations living in oppressed societies to safely and securely reach the outside world over the internet. In 2003, the I2P network spawned out of the Freenet project. In 2006, Tor separated from the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory and became a nonprofit. In 2009, Bitcoin and the concept of cryptocurrency entered the picture, which ultimately gave way to the marketplaces and the ability to conduct anonymous transactions. The dark web marketplace known as Silk Road emerged in 2011 and was quickly followed by competitors capitalizing on the opportunity to make money. By 2002, researchers found that Silk Road had made an estimated $22 million, but by 2013, the Department of Justice and international authorities caught up to the founder of Silk Road. He was arrested and Silk Road was shut down. In 2015, he was sentenced to life in prison. But the dark web model was already proven, and since, many Silk Road copycats and offshoots have sprung up. In fact, as of today, there is even a Silk Road 3.0 doing much of the same activity. One of the questions we often get is how and why the U.S. government was and still is behind the development and support of the Tor network. We had a screenshot from the About page on Tor's website showing the various sponsors who have supported the Tor network throughout its years of development. You'll see various public and private sector organizations, both domestic and foreign, as well as tens of thousands of donations from individual citizens. You'll notice that the U.S. State Department was a backer as of 2016, and you'll see things like an anonymous North American internet service provider, Google, and several other big tech companies. Now, although Tor is the most widely known and commonly used, other darknets have existed for some time, and new ones are still being created. Several weeks ago, we came across a report about a new competitor to Tor called Riffle, developed by researchers at MIT and a university in Switzerland. Riffle uses the same back-end encryption protocol as Tor, but claims to add extra layers of defense to prevent law enforcement surveillance and other unauthorized parties from intercepting communications. So now we come to the question of why. Why do users turn to the dark web? And undoubtedly, the primary reason for many is anonymity, which allows users to conceal their identity, particularly their location. In the King's College research paper I mentioned earlier, they used an analogy of traditional paper mail to explain the characteristics of the dark web that make it appealing to users. I thought this was particularly helpful. Using this analogy, anonymity is the equivalent of sending a letter without a sender address or signature, as a way of hiding one's identity from the recipient and other observers. Another reason for using the dark web is privacy, the equivalent of sealing a letter in an envelope, as a way to protect the message in transit against unauthorized access. Another factor is authentication, which again, using the analogy, is the equivalent of a handwritten signature or letterhead on a letter as a way to prove that the sender is who they say they are. Combining those three factors, anonymity, privacy, and authentication, many users turn to the dark web for hidden services, or the marketplaces where they can purchase or sell illicit goods or services. And the availability of a secure and anonymous currency is a final reason why many turn to the dark web. In other words, it removes the need to go to the post office and buy stamps, and there is no record of you using your credit card to buy them or security footage of you standing in the post office. The next question is who? Who really uses the dark web? And the truth is there are many licit and illicit users and uses of the dark web. Although the dark web is primarily used by criminals, hackers, terrorists, and unfortunately pedophiles, it is also used by journalists, whistleblowers, intelligence sources, researchers, and populations of oppressive regimes and in countries where the internet is heavily censored. The next question is what? What types of websites and services are available on the dark web? And there's really four main types. Marketplaces, which are used to buy and sell goods. Forums, which are used to discuss all sorts of topics, from politics to conspiracy theories, but also which dark web sellers are scam artists and which ones are actually legitimate. There's also social networks. Even Facebook has a dark web URL where people can log on to the site anonymously. And then there are anonymous email and chat services, which allow users to mask their identities, but still have a way to communicate with others. To break this down further, we had a graphic, again from King's College, which depicted what they call a taxonomy of the different goods and services on the dark web. Some of the categories include arms or weapons, drugs, extremism, finance, hacking, pornography, social networks, violence, and other. From what Krista's seen, the category of drugs and finance are by far the most popular for users today. The next question is how. How do users access the dark web? The barriers to accessing the dark web and finding what you want are actually pretty low. Now, because this is going up publicly, we don't feel comfortable detailing how one can go about connecting and finding some of the stuff we are going to cover, but to put it simply, it is not difficult. Although there are no search engines, there are several sites that allow a user to search for different types of goods and services and come up with a list of results. There are also many tutorials and step-by-step guides one can find by simply Googling it. Next, we'll dig a little deeper into the marketplaces and the large selection of products and services available on the dark web. Some of these include stolen credit card and bank account numbers, stolen personal information or health records, illicit drugs, but also legitimate pharmaceuticals, weapons, many different types of pornography, stolen and counterfeit electronics, hacking tools or hackers for hire, and various other services such as counterfeit currency, fake IDs, and even contract killers. But the legitimacy of the contract killing advertising is questionable, and many seem to think they are a hoax. So now we're going to cover some of the specific websites that we've found that provide examples of the different goods and services one can buy. First, we have an example of a site selling stolen U.S. ATM debit cards, which they claim a buyer will be able to use one of these debit cards at any ATM in the world. They claim that the card is equipped with the newer chip or EMV technology, and that each account has a minimum of $2,500 and up to $5,000. This site lists an email domain called sigaint.org, which is an anonymous email service intended to, according to their own website, quote, combat the dragnet surveillance that exists on the internet today. Another site selling prepaid debit cards says that the money comes from other people's compromised accounts. On this site, we highlight how many dark websites have a lot of the same features as legitimate websites, such as an about page, contact information, feedback, and frequently asked questions. They also try to convey that the service is, quote, risk-free. For the podcast listeners, next we had a graphic that showed some research done by Dell SecureWorks earlier this year, analyzing price changes for illicit goods and services over the last several years. They found the average price of a fraudulent U.S. Visa or MasterCard was actually up a little bit to $15, and someone could buy a premium American Express or other kind of credit card for just $30. Next, we have an example of what's called a one-stop-shop identity theft website. In this case, they sell passports, social security cards, driver's licenses, and even birth certificates. They claim to ship from right here within the United States, and they say that they're willing to ship internationally, no problem. This site is advertising to essentially sell someone U.S. citizenship for less than $6,000. The next example is a vendor specializing in U.S. passports, and they appear to be quite real. In this case, the seller actually does claim that they're real and legally issued from an insider they have at the State Department. Of course, we can't confirm the validity of that statement, but the vendor goes on to explain his whole process, which involves the official DS-11 passport form, and they claim they split the proceeds evenly with their State Department insider. The next example is a site specializing in driver's licenses. This vendor claims that the IDs he produces are scannable and contain holograms and other markings. Again, another example of a vendor saying they're shipping from within the U.S. with a quick 48-hour turnaround. Some more results from that Dell research, in this case looking at things like identities, passports, and social security cards. They found prices for U.S. passports range from just $3,000 and up to $10,000. And for just $90, one can buy what they call an identity package, which includes a social security card, a driver's license, and a utility bill to match. Moving on to drugs, which are arguably the most common commodity being bought and sold on the dark web. This is for several reasons, and it is only logical that in the near term, the majority of illicit transactions will be purchased and acquired to the dark web, as opposed to parking lots and back alleys. Some of the reasons for this are it is incredibly fast and easy, there's a larger variety of drugs, it's safer and more convenient, and there's reduced risk for both the buyer and seller. We're starting to see many sites use escrow to complete transactions, which protects the buyer's funds until they receive their goods, and user feedback is actually a really big part of the culture on the dark web. Next, we had a screenshot from one of the wiki-style sites that provides users with a list of options to explore various drug markets. Some of the advertising tactics are the use of escrow, again as a middleman to ensure the customer receives their product before their funds are released to the seller. You have another marketplace called Pablo Escobar Drug Store, where they offer small quantities for testing, and then another claiming to sell the finest organic cannabis shipped from right here within the U.S. Next, we had one example of a German-based drug marketplace, which shows that these websites are, again, very similar to what you'd see on the normal internet. You have high-resolution photos of the various types of drugs, upfront pricing for what you're paying for, and user ratings on each type of drug. The next example we had was a site specializing in marijuana, where you can buy dozens of different types at various quantities, with the highest amount being shown at 200 grams, which is about half a pound. In another example, we saw an edibles dealer selling everything from mushrooms to baked goods and even LSD. The next example is what we call a dark web pharmacy, which is quite comparable to your corner drugstore. It's available 24 hours a day. It's available in 6 different languages. These pharmaceutical sites offer dozens, if not hundreds, of different types of drugs, from the most common and relatively harmless to the more concerning painkillers that are wreaking havoc on many U.S. communities. To demonstrate the local aspect of all of this, we had an example from one site selling what they called a New York bag of heroin, selling for less than $17. At the bottom right of the screenshot, there are over 370 pages of user reviews indicating how many users have purchased from this particular site in just 5 months. And the next screenshot showing the first page of reviews shows that a number of users have purchased this heroin in just the last 12 hours. Moving on to weapons, similar to narcotics, there are many, many different sites selling all types and sizes of weapons. In the first example, this seller ships via FedEx overnight, and again from within the US. Similar to others, they tout the quality of their product, and the seller provides some insight into how they ship by breaking down the gun into its different components and shipping inside of power tools or computer cases. The next example we had showed the extensive user reviews and the frequency that these weapons are being purchased. In another example of a weapons dealer, the user has the option between assault rifles, fully automatic rifles, submachine guns, sniper rifles, and even grenade launchers. And lastly, one site is even selling a military-grade 50 caliber sniper rifle with various upgrades, selling for $17,500. Moving away from guns, chemical and biological agents are also of concern. In 2015, there were at least two examples of individuals attempting to purchase or sell ricin over the dark web. And finally, the last area we cover is the various hacking services and tools one can obtain on the dark web. Again, going back to Dell SecureWorks research, they found you could pay a hacker to hack into someone else's personal email account for just $129 or a corporate account for $500. For those looking to do the hacking themselves, various malicious hacking tools are available for as low as $5 and others for between $100 and $400 that can be used against many victims, such as exploit kits. Wannabe hackers can also take lessons for just $20 to $40. Or a bitter employee or competitor looking to do harm to a business can pay for a hacker to steal data from a website for $350. Someone can also arrange a distributed denial-of-service attack, also known as a DDoS attack, for as little as $5 an hour or $30 a day. Another common tactic these days is doxing, which is compiling someone's personal information such as address, phone number, their family members' information, and their financial or medical data and releasing it publicly on social media or elsewhere on the internet. Someone can pay to have someone else doxed for as little as $20. Now, for all the goods and services I've discussed, the communications are anonymous and encrypted. The standard currency is Bitcoin, though there are other cryptocurrencies that are also used. Users send funds directly to a digital address, and unlike bank accounts, there is no legitimate identity or address associated with that account. Items are shipped discreetly, and again, in most cases, feedback is left by the buyer to build trust or warn others of negative experiences. A little bit more on the shipping, we had one site as an example where the seller explains the various tactics they use to conceal drugs and other illicit goods, and as they say, quote, "to be sure the customs border will never find it." This site has a series of images which show how the seller conceals these goods. Illicit goods are shipped in video game consoles and computer components, food cans, soda cans and air fresheners, books, shoes, tanning lotion, really anything you can think of. We've even seen some scenarios where once a user buys something, the vendor has them go to eBay or some other legitimate website and purchase an item. Then the goods purchased off the dark web are shipped along with that eBay item as a way to cover their tracks and have it be delivered with a legitimate good. Moving on to payments, again, Bitcoin is the most common type of cryptocurrency we see on the dark web. As of last week, the conversion rate of one Bitcoin was $659. Users can purchase Bitcoins through online dealers or traders, or even in some cases in person. They're exchanged through the sale of goods and services, and also earned through what's called mining, which is where users are rewarded for processing Bitcoin transactions. Users must set up a Bitcoin wallet, which is a file on your computer or device used to manage your Bitcoin funds. And the difference between a Bitcoin wallet and a traditional bank account is that the user's true identity and address are not tied to that Bitcoin wallet. Similar to the URL of websites on the dark web, the address of a Bitcoin wallet is a series of alphanumeric characters. Transactions on the dark web are sent directly from Bitcoin wallet to Bitcoin wallet, and there is no middleman. Bitcoin transactions are controlled and maintained in a secure, anonymous format by using what's called a blockchain. Now, I am no expert on Bitcoin, so I pulled some excerpts from Bitcoin.org to talk a little bit more about the background and how it works. So Bitcoin.org says that Bitcoin is the first decentralized peer-to-peer payment network that is powered by its users with no central authority or middlemen. They say Bitcoin is the first implementation of the cryptocurrency concept, which was first described back in 1998 by an individual by the name of Wei Dai on a cyberpunk's mailing list, where he suggested the idea of a new form of money that uses cryptography to control its creation and transactions rather than a central authority. The first Bitcoin specification and proof of concept was published in 2009 in a cryptography mailing list by an anonymous individual or group using the alias Satoshi Nakamoto. The Bitcoin protocol and software are published openly, so any developer around the world can review the code and make their own modified version of the Bitcoin software. Now, I mentioned blockchain. Blockchain is the backbone of Bitcoin, and it's what's called a public ledger. This ledger contains every transaction ever processed, allowing a user's computer to verify the validity of each transaction. We pulled a graphic that depicts this blockchain process, but quite frankly, it doesn't help simplify it anymore. According to Wikipedia, a blockchain consists of blocks that hold time-stamped batches of each valid transaction. Each block includes the hash or unique code of the prior block in the blockchain, linking the two together. The linked blocks form a chain, with only one successor block allowed to link to one other predecessor block, thus giving it the blockchain name. Bitcoin has been in the news quite a bit lately, and there's a lot of public debate as to whether Bitcoin is or is not money. Just last week, a Miami judge issued a ruling in which she said that Bitcoin is in fact not money. The judge wrote that attempting to fit the sale of Bitcoin into a statutory scheme is like fitting a square peg in a round hole. She went on to state that this court is not an expert in economics, however, it is very clear, even to someone with limited knowledge in the area, that Bitcoin has a long way to go before it is the equivalent of money. And that is actually in line with what the IRS put out several years ago in guidance on virtual currency. They said that although virtual currency operates like real currency, it does not have legal tender status in any jurisdiction, and that virtual currency is treated as property for U.S. federal tax purposes. But the fact of the matter is, many consumers and financial markets are certainly treating Bitcoin as money. In fact, it has more than doubled year over year, increasing over 120% from July 2015 to July 2016. So the future of Bitcoin remains to be seen, but there is no doubt that its use on the dark web will continue to increase. Finally, we come to the way forward and looking ahead. We see there being more uses and more users of the dark web, and while there will be more good to come of it, there will also be more bad. We think illicit activity online will surpass traditional crimes in the next couple years. The future of cryptocurrency remains to be seen, but what we do know is that in the near term, there will be many challenges for law enforcement and the need for education, awareness, and training on both the deep and dark web as well as cryptocurrency. For anyone interested in learning more about the dark web, one website we recommend is deep.web, spelled deepdotweb.com. There are also some good dark web discussions occurring on Reddit. One of them under the handle deep.web, same as the website, and then also Darknet Matters. For anyone interested in learning more about the NJ Kick, our website is cyber.nj.gov. Our email address is njkick, spelled NJCCIC at cyber.nj.gov. We're active on Twitter at NJCybersecurity. Again, we encourage anyone to contact us with questions. Thanks for listening.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.